you know, what's going to keep me healthy? What's going to keep me on the playing field? There's nothing worse than thinking about, I'm going to get, you know, the college of my dreams, like, and then having an ACL injury that's going to end your season.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Have a great conversation for you today. My guest, Norma Nieto, has served as the president of Pivot, a wholly owned subsidiary of Impellia. Impellia is a sports medicine and technology company co-founded by former Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Charlie Batch and built off of the technology of some of Pittsburgh's brightest orthopedic doctors. Norma has taken the reins and led the charge on the go-to-market strategy for Pivot and some of their other technologies. And she goes into detail in this conversation, not only about how they've built their company, but also how she transitioned into the startup world from a multi-decade career in management consulting. I think this is going to be a particularly valuable episode for anyone out there looking to make a similar transition of their own or interested in getting into the world of sports technology. So here is my conversation with Norma Nieto.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Norma, thank you for letting us into your home here, and thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to do my first podcast.
I am excited as well. And the starting point, just to build some context for people, I think is explaining Impellia, a little bit about your role there and just the larger mission of the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Impellia, in a nutshell, is really about sports science and bringing a number of new technologies to this world of sports and sports medicine. So, you know, our goal is really to bring personalized biomechanics and, you know, to bring physiological assessments and insights to sports professionals. So that can be anyone from a coach to the player themselves, helping them use data to better improve their performance, to prevent injuries, to optimize their performance. And in order to do that, we have a number of sensor and software-based products and technologies that we use. But at the core of everything we do is data.
And it's this really interesting combination when you talk about a service centered on sports technology. There's multiple areas of expertise that have to be brought together. There, you have to have the biomechanics, the big data fluency. You have to have the understanding of sports and what the athletes and the teams and the coaches are looking for. And then also you could have those two and you wouldn't necessarily have the business sense, the ability to make the model work, to market, to sell, to operate, which is its own unique skill set associated with those other two. So can you talk a little bit about what space you occupy and how the rest of that team gets filled out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is one of the biggest challenges. And I think that's a challenge with anyone who's using data, right? Is, you know, can you, first of all, collect data that's relevant to the field that you're working in, the industry that you're working in? So you need people who understand data, who understand data science. You got to have the technologies that collect it. And then you have to have people who know what to do with it, and then who can make sense of it, as you said. So I come from a very traditional business background. You know, I went through a traditional path. I went to Carnegie Mellon undergrad and majored in economics and industrial management and had some statistics background and took a very traditional career path through consulting and, you know, went the MBA route. So my role in the company started a little bit more in the traditional product management role. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the folks who originally started Impellia came from a very traditional business background, which is a little bit different than a lot of startups where you have people who have a lot of, you know, expertise in the technologies or who, you know, a lot of founders are actually the people who develop the technology themselves. Our business model is a little bit different than that. We work with people who developed the technologies to really bring that business expertise and to help them figure out how to take those technologies to the marketplace or to take it off their hands. You know, for example, our first technology was Pivot that was developed by a pair of orthopedic surgeons here in Pittsburgh, Dr. Freddie Fu and Dr. Volker Musall, who are at the top of their field, orthopedic surgeons, world renowned. And they had a problem in their own world that they wanted to solve. So they worked very hard to develop these technologies using their medical knowledge to help quantify ACL injuries. But, you know, they're not technology founders. They're not going to abandon their careers and go, you know, to Silicon Valley and try to get funding for their startup. And so, you know, these technologies a lot of times just linger. So it's a little bit of more of a long story about how, you know, we came to find out about it, but, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But anyway, so the role that I played was really helping to figure out how to take Pivot, which is the ACL quantification technology, to market. So I was able to bring my business expertise, the technology knowledge that I had acquired as part of my career, really bring some of the traditional disciplines to an innovative technology to really just take it to market to help develop a go-to-market strategy and take that innovation to the market.
And so you were a management consultant at IBM for 2 decades prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the transition from large corporate entity to nimble, fast, agile, crazy, out of control startup? We can go positive, negative with the...
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest, most eye-opening experiences of my life. And I can't... you know, explain some of the things that, you know, were so eye-opening for me. And not only did I work in management consulting at IBM, I also worked in the government sector. So talk about, you know, your slow bureaucratic organizations that, you know, take so long to make decisions and need tons and tons of data and approval and, you know, 30 people in a room to make a decision that takes months and months and months and, you know, binders full of information. You know, just to give you a quick example, I used to support the U.S. Postal Service. You probably can't think of a more bureaucratic organization. So
called snail mail.
Yeah, exactly. In order to change the price of a stamp, you know, they have a room where they keep the documentation that they need to prove that the price of a stamp should be raised. You know, it's libraries full of that information. So to go from that environment where, you know, you have to justify those kinds of decisions to an environment where, you know, I would spend a lot of time trying to develop financial models and come up with things to justify pricing decisions or feel like I never had enough information. You know, it took me a little while to make that adjustment to kind of learning to go with your intuition and learning that it was okay to make mistakes and to make course corrections along the way. And that sometimes you just have to put things out there and learn, you know, that it's okay to go with, you know, the minimum viable product, to go to market and to get feedback and to kind of learn in an iterative process rather than, you know, at IBM, we would go to market with really complete solutions and we would never put things in front of a client unless we felt that they were, you know, near perfect. And while, you know, we definitely worked with clients closely, but, you know, the kind of the IBM brand was so not untouchable, but, you know, you risked a lot when you went to market. So you couldn't really take a lot of chances and make mistakes. You had to be very confident of what you were putting out there. And not to say that you don't have to be confident when you're putting out a product or startup, but it's okay. And you do little experiments, and, you know, in the corporate world, you do pilot tests, and that's what you called them when you were, you know, willing to risk a little bit and make a mistake. But here it's, you know, it's everything you're doing is almost a pilot. So to kind of switch that mentality was definitely something I had to get comfortable with uncertainty. And, in a way that I never had before.
And often when it's that kind of paradigm shift, the way I process that is if you can reframe it, that's what really unlocks you feeling more comfortable in it. So instead of it being unorganized and scary and unclear and we have so little information, it's the opportunity to make those mistakes. It's the opportunity to change things really quickly that allow you to feel more comfortable. This is how it's supposed to be. We're meant to be iterating at a cycle that we've never done before. That's what's going to make us different and better. Is that also part of the reframe mm-hmm. that you had to go through?
Yeah, it is. It is. And on the positive side, you know, I was able to bring discipline and the skills that I had learned you know, when doing a more disciplined market sizing, when doing, you know, a financial model and cash flows on the fly, that I was able to bring ways to bring that into, you know, what I was doing in the startup, ways to bring in a little bit more structure that allowed everybody to feel a little bit more comfortable with what we were doing along the way. So that, you know, I was able to inject a little bit of that, you know, let's find something out real quick. And I know how to do it fast. It's okay. We can still, you know, get a little bit of information. We don't have to fly blind. Here's a methodology that we can use. Here's some approaches, you know, it's okay. We can do some prioritization. We can apply some things, some discipline. We don't have to do everything without structure.
Absolutely. So when you talk about the go-to-market strategy that you had to develop for Pivot and these other products in the suite for Impellia, one of the things that we discussed on a recent episode with Courtney Williamson is the notion that when you're in the kind of biomedical space, where you're interacting with human bodies. It's not bits on a screen. It's not a shirt or some sort of small physical mm-hmm. product. There is a much more rigorous and difficult sales cycle associated with first proving that your thing does what it actually says it's going to do, mm-hmm. trusting and understanding the value proposition associated with it, and then just frankly people being comfortable with it because they are influencing their body with that service that you're offering. So can you get into a little more detail about what you learned specifically as it pertains to these sports technologies and how you've gone about educating and selling to this market?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So one of the advantages, for example, of our business model overall, and then with Pivot specifically, is that we didn't do a lot of the hard work associated with that. So our doctors did. They did cadaver studies to prove that their technology worked. You know, they would test ACL injuries using the technology to prove that the technology worked just as well as the alternative, which is it's called the Pivot Shift test. It's a manual test that actually just feels what, you know, whether there's a tear. It's very subjective. It's based really very much on the experience of the doctor, of the orthopedic surgeon, of a physical therapist, to really feel that. And that's one reason why, you know, Pivot came about, because they wanted a way to really take that subjectivity out. So they wanted to quantify that. So Pivot is really an image-based technology. So it just really uses three markers on the knee. And you film the test essentially, in the measurement and the way that those markers interact is what gives you a measurement of how the knee moves, and that tells you whether there's a tear or not. And it actually gives you a quantitative measurement in millimeters. Now the doctors, of course, they know what that means, right? And very experienced sports professionals know what that means. And there's a yes and a no. So you know, like if there's no movement in a specific marker, that there's no tear. But then there's also a more objective measurement. So it could be, you know, 2 millimeters versus 5 millimeters, which means something to an orthopedic surgeon that doesn't necessarily mean anything to a lay person, right? So that is a hard sell, right? It's you know, how do you educate a sports professional? How do you start to get that data? And so it becomes one of those things that a lot of people, I think, in data-driven products face, is the more data you have, the more useful your product is, right? So can we start to establish some baselines? And the doctors have done that, right? So they've started to see knees. They've started to build up a database and a catalog of, well, you know, above 4 millimeters, I'm going to do this type of surgery. But, you know, less than, I might recommend physical therapy and not use, you know, not necessarily recommend surgery. So there's a kind of a base of knowledge that you have to establish, really. But if you're, you know, say you're the coach of a football team and, you know, you want to do some baseline testing with your players. So you're going to start to build up a repository of knowledge. So, you know, a lot of what we do is trying to establish the benefits of having, you know, of just like anybody else, of having data that you can compare along the way. And then, you know, if you have baseline data, your player gets hurt, you have something to compare it to. Whether you knew exactly that it was 2 millimeters before, it was 0, you have a baseline. And if they get injured and then you rehabilitate, you have something that you can go back to. So I think, you know, trying to work with them. And one of the things, of course, that we had a lot of early conversations about was, hey, if, you know, just basic question, if you had this data, would it mean something to you? Is this something that's useful to you? So I don't know if I mentioned that Charlie Batch is one of our co-founders. So he's the backup quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers for people who aren't from here or don't know who he is.
And he played for the Lions for a while.
Yeah, and he played for the Lions too. So we are also Ann Arbor based. So we have some connections in Detroit and Michigan. But, you know, he was one of the ones who brought some of these technologies to our attention early on, and it was one of the impetuses for founding Impellia, you know, to say, hey, there's these technologies and we can use them to help players. So, you know, he was one of the people who had those early conversations with the trainers, with coaches, you know, is this something, and there are, like in anywhere else, people who like to use data, who love it and know how to use it, and then others who are like, no, you know, I just have an intuitive sense of how it works. So like anywhere else, you have, you know, some that would say, this would be really useful to me and I would love to have it. So, you know, so they're using this technology at the University of Pittsburgh to baseline all their athletes for preseason readiness, you know, so we like to, you know, be able to make those case studies of here's how you can use it.
So as I hear this, I can't help, I'm trying to self-assess. You know, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail to some degree. And mm-hmm. in my world, in my work, I'm always thinking about brand and reputation and character. And that's, I mean, we're creating media. That's a lot of the mm-hmm. process. And while on one side of the sales that you're making, it is associated with this data, this use case, this case study, I can't help but kind of like a moth to a flame to some degree look towards, well, we have Freddie Foo. If you're in Pittsburgh and you've ever had an orthopedic injury and had to go to physical therapy, there's a good chance you've heard of Freddie Foo. He has the whole wall of pictures at the orthopedic center. Charlie Batch, like you said, is a well-known name to any Steelers fan. And even further, if you're selling into these different sports teams, they have their own brand identity as well. I'm curious how it plays a part or if it plays a part when you're trying to either find new business or just connect with new people. How big of a deal is it to have those types of names and brands and stories that, you know, well, if it's good enough for the University of Pittsburgh, if it's good enough for the Detroit Lions or Pittsburgh Steelers, not saying that those mm-hmm. are clients, but well, then it's obviously good enough for me. And that almost like short circuits people's decision-making process. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it absolutely is part of, you know, the overall strategy is really to leverage those names. So there are two paths, and I think you mentioned one being the, you know, cachet of Dr. Fu and Dr. Musall, who perhaps is not as well known, you know, to the general public, but certainly within orthopedic circles. So he is, you know, he speaks about Pivot at international conferences. As a matter of fact, you know, somebody heard him speak about Pivot and they thought, hey, you know, maybe I can use this in my own practice for a whole different joint. They came up with, you know, thinking about it, maybe I can use it on shoulders. And so, you know, I recently came back from a trip to Greece where I was helping them figure out if they could indeed, you know, try to use our product on it. And I can't say too much about it, but what we're excited about, you know, the potential of it. So, you know, that whole cachet around him speaking about it and really pushing the product is very useful in the orthopedic surgeon circles, the physical therapy and that whole track. You know, we get a lot of inquiries about, you know, the product itself from that group. And then also then, of course, the sports. And I think, you know, nowadays, especially in college, having the latest technologies, having something that's going to prevent injuries, something that's cutting edge is a huge advantage from a recruiting standpoint. When college athletes come, they want to see that your college has the latest technology. You know, what's going to keep me healthy? What's going to keep me on the playing field? There's nothing worse than thinking about, I'm going to get, you know, the college of my dreams, like, and then having an ACL injury that's going to end your season, you know, prematurely. So just actually on that note, just to give you an idea, I just looked this up. There's already 57 knee injuries in the NFL. 57 players are already have knee-related injuries, and 40 of them are season-ending. So wow. They require surgery. And then, you know, a couple years ago when I was pitching for Pivot, you know, you could field at every single position, there was somebody who had an ACL tear or injury. before the season even started.
The all-ACL team.
The all-ACL team, that's right, yeah. So, you know, there's it's definitely such a huge thing. And that's just ACL. So, you know, our technologies cover a huge span. So injury prevention is such a big need. And it's not just for sports. So, you know, sports is how we lead. Sports is really, you know, like you said, there's a cachet. Hey, you know, the NFL's using it. The colleges are using it. Worldwide soccer is a huge sport that's much more global. Obviously here, that's a big candidate for ACL injuries as well. Anything where you got to switch directions really quickly. And I'm talking a lot about knee, but there's so many other kind of injuries. So strike foot, which is our gait sensor technology, allows you to track a lot of different ankle injuries. So, you know, you can tell a lot about, you know, somebody's potential for injury in the way that they're balancing their weight, in the way that they're favoring a foot, you know, what's going on there. So there's, you know, there's a lot of need for that. But, you know, in a broader sense, you know, knee injuries take out, you know, it can take out anybody, your local mailman, you know, a construction worker, older people who are playing golf suffer from a lot of ACL injuries. So as the population ages, you get a lot of, you know, JROMs is our joint range of motion. So you get hip, knee, shoulder. There's a lot of injuries that affect the general population too. And if you can get injury prevention around those, and you can get more on the rehabilitation side, so you can actually track, you know, when somebody's, are they really doing their, you know, their exercises when they go home? That's what JROMs is about. You know, what is their joint range of motion? Like, are they actually getting better? Can they lift their arm, you know, all the way up 180 degrees? Or are they only getting, you know, 45 degrees? Are they experiencing pain? Are they doing only 5 repetitions? Or are they doing 20? So we want to make sure to be able to hold people accountable to their rehab. And of course, again, sports is an easy case study, but there's a lot of people, you know, when you think about the general population who suffer. And of course, healthcare has a big need to have accountability, you know, better outcomes and reduced costs of, you know, trying to make sure that they don't have to go back and get surgery again. You know, if you can do it with physical therapy, it's all the better.
And that's the other thing that's really interesting that maybe not everyone realizes is so many procedures and technologies have started in sports and then spilled over into mm-hmm. the general public just because, you know, Le'Veon Bell or Adrian Peterson's ACL is just more valuable than mine at sure. this point in time. So there's this greater vested interest in someone investing for the absolute cutting edge technology, but it is in that initial investment, that pushing of the barriers into new territory that makes it eventually accessible for the general public. And I think that's, you know, something I only recently came to really appreciate is how significant those type of breakthroughs are in trickling down to the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, when Charlie speaks about, you know, why he's so passionate about this is, I mean, that he really wanted that, you know, why should we be the only ones who get access to these great technologies? He really wants to make it available to everybody in the long run. And he works very closely with UPMC and, you know, they're, Freddie Fu and Dr. Musall are UPMC doctors who use these technologies on their patients. And, you know, we hope that in the long run, it will be, you know, accepted and paid for by, you know, insurance. So, but like you said, you know, you have to prove those technologies and it is a longer path. So for something, you know, for something like Pivot, which actually does not touch the body, it's a little bit easier path, but, you know, other technologies, it's a long path. And anybody who's going down the path of medical device or healthcare apps, it is a long path. Now sports is easier, you know, because sports is the entry point because there is not as many regulations and you can use the case for, you know, performance improvement. You can have people test these technologies for you and start to get some base data to start to get some cases where you don't have the barriers, you know, that you would for Medicare reimbursement, for example. The burden of proof isn't as high. Now, we do have a lot of scientific papers that really prove, hey, this technology can diagnose an ACL tear as effectively as the pivot shift test, which is the gold standard. You know, here's our scientific proof. So in a way, you know, we have a lot of that scientific evidence. The others tend to be more functional assessment technologies, so we may not have that high a burden with the FDA as some other technologies might. But it's still very much a gray area. It's still evolving, whether you can prove that it's the equivalent of a pivot shift test or it's something else, whether it's really a medical device or not. The mobile apps area in the FDA, I spent a lot of time reading a lot of those regulations to try to figure out what applied to us and what didn't. We worked with the law firm to also figure out a lot of those things. So you just have to be really careful in how you position it. So one thing our app does not do is it never diagnoses. It doesn't say you have an ACL tear, right? So it gives you the information and it's really the clinician who interprets that information. So the more sophisticated you get and you want to, you know, put more things into it, then, you know, it becomes a double-edged sword. You know, when do you cross the line into diagnostics and then you're subject to regulation?
Right. That makes it more difficult. I remember it wasn't me, it was a friend, but he had some sort of injury where like it was basically clear that he had broken his leg. Like you're looking at the leg, you're like, that's a broken leg. And the athletic trainer's like, I think it may be broken. Like, I was like very careful not to say specifically that, yeah, like he had a broken leg. So that's just brought up that ridiculous memory for me. Before we aim towards wrapping up, Norma, one of the other questions that I had is, given that you've really taught us a lot about this go-to-market strategy and the different areas that you're deploying, but who makes this type of decision for the organizations that you're selling into? Like, it's not the head coach. Who are you trying to reach in order to make this type of decision for an organization like the Pitt football team?
Yeah. So a lot of times it's a strength and conditioning coach who really thinks about those kinds of things, right? So they are responsible for the overall health of the player. So we worked in the University of Michigan, we have a partnership with them, and it was the strength and conditioning coach for Michigan basketball who was really excited about a lot of our technologies, and we did some pilots with them. So that's usually the person that we're going to work with, but a lot of times it depends on who we have relationships with, and it can just be somebody who, again, you know, loves technology, wants a cutting edge advantage, who will, you know, maybe approach us or we will approach them, or they'll hear about something and, you know, get an idea of something. But a lot of times it is the strength and conditioning coach who tends to be the one who is interested in our technologies, and that they're responsible for the overall well-being of the athletes.
Makes sense. Well, this has been great. I want to aim towards asking our last two questions. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, was there anything else you're hoping to share today that I didn't give you a chance to?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that I didn't really mention is really kind of the uniqueness of our business model. And I don't know, I really want to emphasize the uniqueness of our platform. So we talked about a lot of different technologies, but underlying it all is our overall vision of really connecting those to really, really make this about predictive. So I talked about, you know, we have a gait analysis technology, we have a joint range of motion technology, we have, I didn't talk about Prairie, but it's, you know, scent that picks up sensors as the players are actually on the field. We have the ACL. So really what makes us unique is the ability to bring all the data from those technologies together to make a comprehensive assessment of the overall athlete. We also have a metabolic technology that we're working on to give you that, you know, we always talk about the 360 degree view of the athlete in to make predictions about really their overall health, their overall performance. So that's kind of our end vision. And we have the ability to bring new technologies as they emerge and really make sense of it. So you talked about, you know, bringing the sports expertise. We have people who are experts in kinesiology, who are experts in their field of sports. We have the former GM of the Bills on our team. We have people who've worked in sports. We have, you know, so we do have a team that knows how to actually make sense of that data, because it can be overwhelming when you think about the sheer amount of data that comes from a player, even just one player wearing a sensor during an entire football game. That's overwhelming. The XYZ coordinates, the gait, you know, technology, every step that they take, it's incredible. So, you know, we want to help, you know, even just the sports world or anybody really make sense of that data and be able to say, what do we do about it today? You need to eat more protein. You need to, you know, lay off that foot. You need to, you know, maybe reduce your workouts to 3 times a week. You need to strengthen, you know, your quads so that you're going to prevent that ACL injury down the road. So that's, you know, our overall vision is really that comprehensive view of the flare.
It's exciting. It's exciting to
it is really
envision
exciting.
That in the future. So I'm excited to track your progress as you pursue that goal. I know that the audience will be interested in that as well. What digital coordinates can we provide people who want to follow along and learn more and connect with you?
Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, the Impelli website's a good place to start to get that view, which is www.impellia.co.com.
Beautiful. We're going to link that in the show notes. Okay. GoingDeepWithAaron.com/podcast is the place to find it for this and every episode of the show. But as we do at the end of each episode, Norma, I want to give you the mic a final time to issue your actionable personal challenge for the audience.
Okay. So because I'm a little bit older, and I don't know if you mentioned that you have people who, you know, are in the consulting, and I will say definitely do not be afraid of taking a risk and thinking about a startup as your next career move. You know, you might think, well, I've been stuck. I was, you know, 44 years old when I joined a startup. So it was something that I was always afraid of younger. You know, my family was very traditional. When I graduated CMU, your career paths were consulting systems or going corporate. You know, it was 1993. There was no such thing as startups. You know, it wasn't an option. And I think I got stuck in a little bit of that mentality of, that's too risky. So it's never too late to make a bold move.
I love that. That is such a great note to wrap up on. And I hope that some people will take that challenge. Norma, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. If you liked this, you need to mark your calendar for March 23rd, hosting the Going Deep Summit that day with a bunch of fantastic speakers in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Already sold a bunch of tickets, already announced some fantastic speakers with a few more coming down the pipe. So mark your calendars, get your tickets, and I'll see you there.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.